Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's bet.
All my bets were safe. There just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
It is the busiest time of the sports world. Can't sleep on the NBA. It is sneaks up on you next week, opening night. So we figured we had to discuss season win totals and a little different running a three-man weave here. Bringing in professional bettor Preston Johnson, who came up with the idea for this podcast. Preston, how are you, man?
I'm doing well, man. I'm excited to do this.
Yeah, and then Brian Windhorst, not a degenerate gambler like maybe myself, but very involved in the NBA, very knowledgeable. And, Brian, you did tell me I'm an action junkie many years ago, so I figured you were an appropriate person to bring on the podcast.
I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm just going to wing it.
That's all right. Usually it's like the March Madness pool when – you know, everyone's like, oh, my wife picked on mascots or colors, and they end up doing better.
No, I'm not. I know what I'm doing in terms of picking, but I mean, like, we'll just leave some to mystery. Just go ahead.
Okay. Well, look, we are so close to the season tip-off. A lot of these numbers have been bet by, you know, they're hardened into place. Preston, is that fair? Like, they're now hard versus soft?
Yeah, absolutely. Like usually right before tip-off or kickoff for a football game, you know, the market's the most efficient, you know, the closer we get to that point. So in this case, yeah, we're betting into season win totals that have been up and down for a couple months. And there's been some injuries recently that are going to make adjustments. The Jimmy Butler saga, you know, Minnesota was 45, now it's 41.5. So there's a lot that's been going on, but it'll be interesting to fire in. But if any of us do pretty well against these numbers this late in the summer, you know, right before in the preseason, that's usually a pretty good sign. So I'm excited to see how we do.
Well, if nothing else, it's a win because we're talking NBA. There's been so much football talk, and I get that. But look, we got the baseball Final Four beginning tonight. And, of course, Preston and I, big Dodgers fans, so we're interested in that. And then, obviously, hockey underway, and then the NBA, which, Brian, what is this, year two of the extended schedule, the earlier start?
Yeah, they started building in a little bit of a different schedule a few years ago when they did a week off for All-Star and sort of messed with things. But this is the second year in a row now where basically mid-October, I mean, there were seasons where the opener wouldn't be until November 4th, depending on how the calendar fell. And this year, the opening date is October 16th. So it's really, and it's almost as early as it can go on that side of the calendar. So yeah, it's snuck up on me. I'm not really ready for it yet, to be honest with you.
I was going to say for all our listeners who feel like it's starting early, it's because it is. And it's always like Halloween was the trigger for me. And, yeah, this is insane. But you know what? All tickets cash the same. We talk about that and second half blowouts, whatever. So it's important to find the inefficiencies in the market if we can this late. Now, I was supposed to figure out the order here. I did not do my job, but I did hit the cafeteria, which I clearly prioritized over the picking. Kai, why don't you pick who goes first? Because all spots, this is not the NBA. We're going snake format here, so it doesn't really matter who goes first.
Honestly, I said let's start with Preston, man.
Okay.
Let's start with the expert.
Yeah, and the man who created this idea. And then, Brian, do you want to go second or third?
It's up to you, sir.
Why don't you go third? I'll let you go back-to-back. I feel like there's an advantage there. Just give you a little you don't have to sweat out my picks at all. So I'll go second. Preston, you're on the T-box first.
Yeah, that sounds good. My first, I guess, rated total here is going to be the Jazz over 50 wins. So for people that are listening, there are other positions or opportunities in the market where you can get 48.5 juiced or 49.5. Westgate, the lines that we're using for all of the teams today in this draft, they're at 50. I still like it. I actually project 54.7 wins. Even last year's team, Gobert was hurt. Mitchell was a rookie. Their Pisag wins was 55. They only ended up winning 48, I believe. But they were a 55-win team just a year ago. Some other teams in the West got better. But you remember last year after the All-Star break when Gobert did return, they had the best plus-minus, you know, point differential in the entire NBA. I think they're really good, and they were young, and they're still coached so well that I have no reason to believe they can't get the 50. I think they're the third-best team in the West. So Jazz, my number one pick, over 50 wins.
And Preston, just to clarify, where have you lived and where did you go to college?
That's not fair. But I grew up in L.A., so I'm a Lakers fan.
Yeah, but
I didn't go to college in Utah.
So yeah, okay. A little bias there at all?
Little bit, I guess.
I don't think so. I happen to 100% agree with them. I think that's it was very high on my board to go that route. So I agree with that.
So with LeBron to the West, how much does that change these season win totals when you guys look at this? Because, I mean, I think there's just going to be cannibalism with the West being so top heavy. I mean, I know that's been the case the last couple years, but I feel like it's more so this year.
I feel like if, and this is going to be a factor just in the totals, betting, if you spin your wheels in the Western Conference, like if you have, you know, if your star player sprains his ankle or sprains his, you know, knee and he misses 10 games and you go 5-5 or 4-6, or you have a spurt where you just, you know, you get out of sorts, and you, you know, you have a time where you play 500 over a piece of the season. You're going to get passed. There's going to be very little margin for error, in the playoff race because I honestly believe I extend it all the way to, I think there's 11 teams that could make the playoffs, in the West. And there are people who could create cases even farther down than that. So, it's kind of like a web.com tour event. Like those events in the golf world are amazing because there's so much talent. You know, you make a bogey and you fall from like tied for third to like tied for 22nd. And that's the way I think it's going to be in the West this year. And that's why injuries are always super important. I don't want to make that the case, but like last year, for example, the Pelicans, you know, they lost Boogie Cousins and before they were able to make the trade for Mirotić and they turned their season around. They went like 1-6 or something like that, 1-5. And that ended up, maybe it cost them a position or two, but it didn't cost them the playoffs. There's an injury where you have that this year. It could cost you the playoffs. And that's, I think, a compliment to the competitiveness in the West.
It's funny. I was thinking that last year as well, but that's not the team I would have chosen. I would have chosen Minnesota as soon as Jimmy Butler got hurt. I believe they were, the 3 seed before he went down.
That's true.
And that brings me – go ahead.
Yeah, but I mean Butler was gone for a good chunk. I mean, I'm just talking about if you have a bad 6-7 games, it could be the difference for you.
Gotcha. Well, I'm that segues to my pick here. I'm going with the T-Wolves under 41.5. I don't see how this ends well, right? Like I don't think they're all going to kiss and make up. I think at some point they're going to have to trade for three-quarters on the dollar if they're lucky. And I just feel like the shelf life of a guy like Tibbs, while I think he's a great coach, and I just think with his minutes and his he can wear on you, I just think like this is the like sort of disaster season for the T-Wolves. I you know, what is it, 41.5? I don't think they go over 500 this year.
Depends on who and if they trade Jimmy Butler. It's a hard to know. That could end up being an easy win or could end up being a tough loss because there's so much uncertainty. But I guess there's uncertainty with every team.
Right. I just don't, again, we talked about the competitiveness in the West. I think all these numbers are inflated to the over. I think if you have to choose one or the other on every team, you should lean under. Because I feel like someone told me this, if you add them all up, it's more than the amount of wins out there. But that's just because of the public liking to bet the over. But I just don't see how this T-Wolf situation ends well. That's just my personal opinion. Preston, where do you sit on this?
Yeah, it's interesting just because last year, at least their metrics, and we'll see how much they've improved if Jimmy Butler isn't there and what they actually would get potentially in a trade. But they were, I think it was something like minus 3.9 points per 100 possessions when Butler was injured. And that's why they dropped from the 3 seed to out of the playoffs, is they were a below-average team without him. And so I don't think, you know, if he doesn't end up playing very often or it's just a wreck and a mess, but he's still with the club, like, I agree. I think it's an under bet for sure. If he's traded, say, to Miami and they get a couple pieces and then everyone's, you know, their mindsets are back to normal, kind of hit the restart button, and maybe you're sweating on, you know, a team that maybe wins 44 to 45 games. But for now, I think betting under 41.5 is where I would go if I had to.
Well, Brian, where is he going to get traded? Come on, you're the insider here.
I mean, he's probably going to get traded to Miami. It's just a matter of what the deal's going to be. And honestly, I don't think that they're that far apart. You know, and I don't know when this is going to post, but like it could happen in 2 hours. It could happen in 2 days. But I think at the end of the day, you have to realize that the team with the leverage is Minnesota. I keep seeing people say Minnesota has no leverage. Minnesota has no leverage. That's just not true. The team with the asset always has the leverage. And you know, the leverage may lessen. And especially with a guy with an expiring contract, but they've made it very clear they're not going to get bullied around. But I think I think unless this goes to February, where you'd have some teams looking to do more of a more comfortable with the rental, anytime in the next month to 6 weeks, I think it's going to be Miami. It's just a matter of what the deal is.
Makes perfect sense. All right, man, you got back-to-back picks here.
So when I saw what the Sacramento Kings over-under was, I was stunned. I'm not sure that I would pick – I'm not sure I would have an easy answer if the over-under was 16. And it is 26. I just in the Western Conference – Sacramento has been maybe the worst decade of transactions in NBA history. And what's so scary about it is despite just an incredibly number of high draft picks, they still don't really have anybody on that roster who you say, oh, that's a franchise level player. And I don't know where Marvin Bagley is going to be. I'm not that excited about his rookie year. So I am taking the Kings under strong. I think they're going to struggle to win 20. And when they do get wins, it's going to be when they're like playing Eastern Conference teams at home. I think they're going to get routinely pounded in the West. Should I just go to my next pick, or do you want to comment on that?
I'm curious. Comment on both of them? What happens? We mentioned how there could be in-game adjustments. What happens if Vivek implements his 4-on-5 defense?
That's the thing. Like, nothing that the Kings will do during the season if anything, their moves will make it worse. In fact, the trade that they made for Nick Stauskas to clear off Nick Stauskas's money, which has this top one protected pick that's now in Boston's hands. That has a potential to go down as one of the worst trades in NBA history. Not necessarily because of the players that it involved, but the idiocy of the concept of the trade and the fact that it could end up costing them as high as a number two pick. And to make matters even worse, they do get it protected if it lands at number one, but this is the new year of the lottery odds. This is where, chance goes against, when you're a bad team, you get bad luck. You've earned it. And so the lottery odds for the first time in decades are now flattened out. The NBA wants to decentivize tanking. So the team that has the most losses will have the least odds to win the number one pick as they've had since the lottery was implemented. And that's really bad news for Sacramento because they're going to have the worst record and they're not even tanking. Yeah, it's just that's how bad their roster is versus the Western Conference. That it's the combination of the both. So, I feel very strong on the under on the Kings.
Preston, where do you stand? Hold on, yeah. I'm curious. A couple things, Preston. Where do you stand on the Kings?
Yeah, I'll throw out a minute, and Brian can take his next team. I think so. They were under on my draft board. They were more middle of the pack, but I do agree. If I had to bet this, it would be under 26. The thing that worries me the most, if I recall correctly, they don't own their first round pick this year. So there won't be any tanking really incentivized unless it's that top number one spot, I guess. I don't know if that's this season or not. But they're not going to be the team that's just giving up and playing all the G League level players after the All-Star break for 2 months. So they'll probably be trying. They'll probably be beating those Eastern Conference teams and they have chances at home. It's still probably not getting to 26. Two other things, Jaren Fox, just preseason, but he's looked really good. And I actually think Harry Giles is a really good player. I mean, he didn't get the play. He's the number one recruit coming out of high school. He's been injured. He's looked kind of really high variance in summer league and preseason. But he can end up being a factor. They're a little deeper, I think, than people realize just because of their youth. They think, oh, well, they're young. They have a lot of, I guess, young guys. And so if any of them step up, they could be there. But they're a team that was on my board for under. I think it should be more like 23.5 is where my number is. So I don't fault Brian for taking it at all.
I have a question also about the new tanking rules or the anti-tanking. Like, I don't think it does that much. I know in recent years we've seen some can't-miss number ones like Simmons and some other guys, but a lot of this tanking happened in the, 5-8 window. I know the Warriors have tanked in the past. I think it was the year they got Harrison Barnes. Like, they had to get to a certain spot because sometimes it's top three protected, sometimes it's top 10. So I feel like tanking exists beyond the number one pick. Now, this won't hurt, but I don't think it really helps the thought process of anti-tanking.
I suppose so, but I mean, my point is that even if they're the worst team in the league record-wise, it doesn't even.
No, I mean, I'm saying aside from the Kings, I'm talking about handicapping games throughout the course of the year. I still think there's going to be full blown tanking in the last.
Yeah, I mean, when we'll be talking about that when we get to whoever picks Cleveland, makes a choice on Cleveland, because Cleveland has is intending to make the playoffs, but they have a top 10 protected pick. And so if they get to February and they're, you know, in 10th or 11th place, they may have a difficult decision. They may trade their veterans and play their young guys. And, you know, I think they're one of the highest variance teams in the league because of the draft pick that they owe to Atlanta. It's top 10 protected.
Gotcha. All right, man, you're up again.
Okay. I'm going to admit that people may, because I think they're going to get off to a bit of a slow start, but I love the Toronto Raptors. I think they have a great chance to win the Eastern Conference. I think they're absolutely loaded. Kawhi is not there yet. I just actually talked to Kawhi last night, and you know, one of the things he said was, "Look, I can't worry about wanting to be the guy that everybody just expects me to be right out of the gate." So, and then they have a tough schedule. They have a lot of Western games early in the season. But I am going to go over on Toronto. And, if you're looking for, this is just a little side, if there are prop bets out there for most improved player, here's a little tip. Pascal Siakam is taking my breath away in this preseason. He looks like Draymond. This is a guy who wasn't basically allowed to touch the ball his rookie year. He basically just played defense. You know, he would take like one shot per like shift out on the court. You know, I don't know what his per 36 were, but he is now an absolute wonder to me. He's been one of the most improved players I've seen in the last decade from year one to year three. I am extremely high on him. OG Anunoby, people forget he had a great rookie season. He was coming off a torn ACL that he suffered at Indiana. He is much healthier. They are deep. They are motivated. They play. They are really well coached. They have a good system. I love Toronto. Don't forget they were a number one seed in the East last year. And in my mind, they've gotten significantly better with their roster. I like the over there, for Toronto.
Yeah, I love this one too. Seventh on my board. The main part for me, you look at the metrics last year, the on-off court stuff with DeMar DeRozan, who they lost, all-star. I understand he's a good player. They were a slightly better team when he was on the bench. Like, Van Vliet was awesome off the bench for them. They're so deep with these guys. So think about that. You're getting a slightly better Toronto team and then adding Kawhi Leonard, and then a lot of them are young. You have the Siakam information from Brian. Like, all these guys are probably going to be better, and then you had a guy like Kawhi. I think people have forgot how impactful he is. So I love the Toronto pick. I think they're definitely an over, definitely worth betting. I think you can find them around 6-7-1 to win the East, which is, I think, is actually some value there.
Yeah, I mean, let's not forget that Siakam, who you just talked about, and OG as well, they were both two guys that the Spurs definitely wanted in the trade with Kawhi Leonard, and the Raptors would not budge.
If I was a Spurs fan and I didn't get my chance to get Siakam, I mean, Anunoby was probably pretty much off the table, but I think Siakam they could have gotten.
Really?
They could have gotten Siakam instead of Poeltl. I don't know exactly how it went, but I don't think that they would have held that up. I know they didn't want to give Siakam, and I mean, I don't want to make it sound like he's going to come out and average a triple-double. Don't get me wrong. I'm more referencing the fact that this guy was maybe the 10th best player on their roster, you know, when he was a rookie, and I'm telling you, he might be their second best player this year, depending on Kyle. I mean, Kyle Lowry is pretty important to them, so I'll probably go Kyle Lowry, but I think he's going to have a massive impact in what they do.
Normally, after a deflating end of the season like that, getting swept after all this hype and getting sort of just smoked by LeBron, I think that just cleaning house, getting a new coach, bringing in Nick Nurse, I think that sort of removes that potential of just sort of that stale vibe where they sort of peaked and they're on the way down to a valley. So I kind of like that, the fact that they are still hungry, and then LeBron obviously exiting the Eastern Conference sort of freshens things up still. So I can see where you guys are going with that. I'm going to stick with another top Eastern Conference team. I'm going over with the Boston Celtics. And it's 59, which is a high number, but and they're going to have a different role here. They're going to be the hunted instead of the hunter, but I mean, for all the obvious reasons. You get all the young guys back with that experience. You get Gordon Hayward back. And I just think they have the best coach in the NBA. And much like we saw with the Spurs over the years, they didn't take nights off. They're just a thoroughbred who were just a class organization and brought maximum effort. I think you're going to get that out of Boston, especially because they're so strong on the defensive end. And I think they're still hungry. Obviously, they reached the conference finals, and now they're the top dog. But I think you're getting a hungry team, even though they're the favorite in the East. So, look, they're not going to win 70 or 65, but I think you get into the 60s with the Celtics, so I like them over 59.
The Celtics are awesome.
They're loaded. Awesome. And they're the best defense. They're so good defensively.
I mean, guys, I mean, the Warriors are so good, but Boston and Toronto are great teams. And even if let's say LeBron had stayed in Cleveland and they brought the same team back, I'm not sure I would feel comfortable about thinking that the Cavs could even make the conference finals. And I know that sounds crazy because LeBron has dominated the East, but that's where these two teams are. I think that both of these teams are dominant, and they're so deep. I mean, Toronto may play 11 guys night in and night out. And not only that, they both have the potential to make mid-season moves where they could even add more talent. They can withstand an injury, even to a star player. I think over on both is, Boston, the number is higher. Which is a little bit harder, but I think over on both is a reasonable bet.
I'll tell you this, Doug. This is the first time in four seasons that I haven't bet Brad Stevens over. So at this point, I think it finally reached where it probably should be. In the past, the numbers have kind of lined up where, I think last year was 52, 52 and a half, 53. And I was, that's about right. But Brad Stevens is probably worth like another three games. And we didn't really know how Gordon Hayward would fit in. And they still went over pretty easily down the stretch. I think when you talk about like Pythag wins a lot of the time, and I do, we're looking at, if you outscore a team by X amount of points, you're projected to win this many games. And if you outscore your opponents, you're going to win more games than you lose. But they win a lot of close games, and sometimes that's called fluky. But when it's every year, one year after another, and you have Brad Stevens making optimal decisions in the last minutes or seconds of every game they play, on the flip side, you have the Hornets, who are always underachieving and winning less games than they should, and it's been three straight seasons. The Hornets are like five or six games under their Pythagorean expected wins number. I think there's something to that. So I'll tell you that I've been on the Celtics train. It worries me that now it is 59 instead of 52 to 53 like it's been. And then it worries me that Gordon Hayward looked very, 60-70% maybe is a good estimate. I think he has some time to get gelled in with the team, and it might take them a little more to get going ultimately.
I mean, they won 55 games last year. So, I mean, look, I know things change year to year. And they have to figure out a way for it to all work. Jaylen Brown's going to have a lesser role. Hopefully the locker room won't take a step back. But, while you've bet the over several years, I have lost too much on fading the Celtics a couple years ago when they had a bunch of clowns and injuries and they had some no-names, and they go in and win these games. It's just incredible what they've done. So I'm now backing the Celtics. I'm done. I'm done picking against them.
Yeah, I can't blame you. Are we ready for next pick?
Yes.
I got one. Cool. I'm curious what Brian thinks. I'm going to go with it. He's dead on. I think it's a really high variance play. There's a lot of factors. But Cavs 31, I mean, they could easily win 40 or more games. They treated the offseason as if they're trying to make the playoffs. They're not treating this as a LeBron left, let's rebuild. And my numbers, this is the biggest one where I actually think they're a 36.9 win team. So this would be like a pretty massive bet, but they could also, again, like Brian mentioned, they could win 20 and it wouldn't surprise anyone that they start tanking in February. So I like the Cavs over at 31. There's some 30 and a halfs out there for people that are listening that are shopping around. That's one of my favorite plays. And I think they have guys that are going to come in and make a difference. And I think you actually get someone, not LeBron James coaching, and Brian will have more insight onto like where he thinks Tyronn Lue is kind of an X's and O's guy, because he hasn't really had the chance to demonstrate that much, and it's been mostly LeBron. So I think with Kevin Love and a lot of experience there on the roster with some younger guys, it's a roster that's easily in an East that's pretty top-loaded still, has a lot of weaker teams. I love the bet. So Cleveland, I'm a Cleveland fan this year, one of the first times in a long time.
Yeah, the issue that I'm afraid of, beyond the fact that they may switch gears mid-season, is just Kevin Love is injury-prone. And if they lose Kevin Love for any length of time, it's gonna be a hit to them. He's had, you know, significant injuries, three of the last 4 years. So, you know, that's always worrisome. They don't have the, ultimate safety net in there. But I do think that, I think if Dan Gilbert could speak freely, if he saw this over-under number, he would be offended because, in Cleveland, they are very, positive that they think they're going to make the playoffs. I actually do not think that they will make the playoffs, but, they cannot make the playoffs and still win more than 31. But, I don't know. I would sort of, this would be a pick'em toss up. It's a little bit low. I think maybe it was if it was 33, I would feel better about even thinking about the under. So, I'm not as solid as Preston is on the over, but it is a low win total for a team that's got some decent talent.
Well, you guys hit the nail on the head just given the unknowns for them because, you know, like you said, the variance, and that's what makes this so fun is because they could make the playoffs or they could really, really stink, especially if they flip their pieces around the trade deadline.
Okay, am I up now?
No, Preston,
no, I got one more
back to back.
Oh, you always go back to back.
Flip side.
Okay.
So I'm going to take this one. 8 minutes before we started this call, I was trying to actually get my mic fixed, which still doesn't work. But I found out that Derek White's out for 6 to 8 weeks. Who's the backup point guard who played really well, even just the other night in a preseason game, I think against Atlanta. But when DeJounte Murray went down, they were a 45 win projected total. Now it's down to 43.5. But Murray, best point guard, real plus minus in the entire NBA last year, defensive real plus minus, I should say. I think Lonzo Ball was second, but those are two guys that kind of got overlooked how well they were or how good they were defensively and how well they worked with their teams and the Spurs defense as a whole. So it hurts, and I just don't envision a world where Greg Popovich's team doesn't win at least, you know, half of their games. So I still don't see it, and so they have Patty Mills is going to, he's a good shooter. He's a good offensive player. He's going to be playing a lot more minutes, and then Brent Forbes, shooter out of Michigan State. They'll probably have DeMar running a lot of the offense now. They'll put more stuff through him. He did it a lot more at Toronto last year, actually. So I'm not too worried there. I'm still just going to go with the numbers and go with Popovich and bet over. But, you know, if it's one of those, if they can't get to 500 or you're slightly above 500, but so be it. You know, they got me.
So that's interesting. You're taking the Spurs because the narrative out of Vegas was all the public is sort of saying what you were saying, minus the actual stats and analytics, but just sort of the, hey, Pop can get them there. They've done it for years. And they did it last year without Kawhi, and here they're adding DeRozan. And then the narrative was that the Sharps are all on the under because of other things, particularly shooting. So I'm glad to hear you take the over in the Spurs because it's against what the narrative was out there. What do you make of the question about their three-point shooting ability, given that they've lost Danny Green, given that they've lost Manu Ginobili even, and then they're adding a guy like DeRozan and Aldridge, who are the masters of the long twos?
The long two specialists, yeah. It definitely helps in that extent that Murray is out and even White is out because they're going to have more shooting now with Mills and Forbes. I will say a guy that I think has a lot of potential and they've kind of just been letting, you know, I guess grow is Davis Bertans, if I'm pronouncing it correctly.
Davis
Bertans. He's a deadly shooter.
He is.
He can stretch the floor. So if he's playing alongside Aldridge at certain times, they'll have plenty of options. I'm actually not too worried about their shooting. And let's be honest, anyone that goes to San Antonio magically becomes a 40% three-point shooter. It just happens. DeRozan, he's going to shoot 40% from three this year. It's just going to happen. It always does. Bruce Bowen, whoever it is. And Kawhi Leonard, like for him to learn how to shoot a three as well as he does, it's just a test to their shooting coach. I forget his name, but I wouldn't be too worried about it.
Chip England, and even he didn't think he could fix Markelle Fultz, which is one of the reasons why they didn't want to trade for him. Don't forget they signed Marco Bellinelli, who, sure. Look, sometimes Bellinelli is good, sometimes Bellinelli is bad, but he was pretty good with Philly last year after he went there. I agree with Preston, Doug. I like the Spurs over the Derek White news. The Derek White news is hard. I actually felt like before DeJounte Murray got hurt, I actually felt the Spurs were going to win more games than they did last year. Not that they were more of a championship contender, but that remember last year, Kawhi played 9 games and DeMar DeRozan played, I think, 74 or 76 games. I mean, just for availability purposes, I felt like they were going to be better. So they take a hit with Murray losing and I feel really bad for him because this was going to be the year he was going to really earn his extension probably next year. But, I still like him over 43.5 with still two all-stars and still one of the best coaches in the league and a lot of depth. So I'm in agreement with, I like that pick.
The reason that I would, I leaned under on this, but I really want to know part of it. But the reason I see this is, and the reason I like backing the Spurs throughout the course of the season, they just don't give you flat. They don't tank, they don't throw in the towel. They don't lay down. They just maximum effort, their system, and enough volume of possessions. They just, they're just a machine, right? And I just, they're so reliable throughout the course of the regular season. Obviously, they, you know, kind of, that doesn't work necessarily against the really talented teams like the Warriors. But throughout the course of the regular season, the back-to-backs, the four games in 5 nights or whatever it may be, long road trips, the rodeo road trip, you just know what you're getting with the Spurs, and that's such an important thing. So this is a little bit of a reach, but there's a reason they're only slated for 32 wins. But I like the Brooklyn Nets over. I like what they did last year. I like their coach. He's obviously from the Spurs, but I just, that sort of concept, I think they're going to have maximum effort all the time. I like the pieces they have in place. Now, they're not very talented in terms of like a championship team, but they have an outside shot, and Kai, don't clip this off in case they stink. They have an outside shot of flirting with the playoff spot because I think they're well coached and they have the right pieces and they play in the Eastern Conference. So I think 32 wins is cheap. And Brian, I want you to weigh in on something. Weigh in on that, of course, as well. But Preston thinks D'Angelo Russell will be an all-star at some point in his career. Where do you stand?
Oh, yeah.
Well, D'Angelo Russell is extension eligible, and we're not hearing a peep on it. So that means that the Nets aren't really ready to invest, and it also means he's incentivized to have a huge season because if he does – in a market next year where there's a lot of money, he could cash in on it. I don't know if I'm ready to call him an all-star, but I do think he's better than he's shown so far. I watched him a lot in college, because he played in the Big Ten. I'm not sure that he can be a difference-making player, but they have another guy on that roster who is heavily incentivized to have a huge season, a guy who will be unrestricted free agent next year, who is one of the most underrated players in the game, Spencer Dinwiddie, who had a breakout year last year. I have loved his game and his size since he came into the league in Detroit. I was kind of really high on him when he was a rookie, and when he got cut a couple of times, and he kind of let me down, but he has really developed into the type of playmaking guard. So, Doug, I am in agreement with you. I'm not so sure about the playoff thing, but somebody in the East has to win some games.
Right.
I at the top end of the East, I honestly believe 3 of the 5 best teams in the league are in the East. For all we talk about the West, the West has more parity. There's going to be there are some tankers in the East. There's no tankers in the West, at least at the start of the season, but there are some tankers in the East. And Brooklyn gets to play, I don't know their schedule, but I assume they get to play Atlanta 4 times. They get to play New York, I know, 4 times. They get to play Chicago. I mean, they're going to win those. They're going to get wins in those games. Get to play Orlando. So I like the over as well, Doug.
Well, I think 37 wins could get in the playoffs. So if they're over-under is 32, that's sort of where I'm going with this.
Let me preface all of this or backtrack a little. For one, I'm a Lakers fan. I still think D'Angelo Russell could be an all-star. But I was mostly defending that they should pick him over Jahlil Okafor at the number 2 pick, which I still feel is a correct decision, no matter what happens to D'Angelo Russell. But I think he definitely is good enough. I just want to ask Doug one question. Okay. And so I'm going to be on the under. I disagree. I think 32 is way too high. I'm just going to read off this list of players: D'Angelo Russell, Joe Harris, Spencer Dinwiddie, who actually bet to win the Skills Challenge last year at 6-1. So I like him too. They're going to probably play together in tandem quite a bit during the season. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Theo Pinson, Zanon Musa, Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, who I actually like a lot, Shabazz Napier, Ed Davis, Dudley, Robbie and his Kirkus, Alan Crabb, Damari Carroll. Is that really a playoff team? Like, they don't have anyone that can lead that team, even in the East.
Well, Jared Allen may be their best player, most valuable player. But
I hope so. I like that guy.
Yeah, no, he's great. Name the 8 playoff teams in the East.
Let me pull them up.
All right, so right Toronto, now. Boston, automatic. Okay.
Philadelphia.
Philly.
You're going to have the Wizards in there for sure.
Yeah.
You're going to have
Milwaukee
in there for sure. You're going to have the Heat in there.
Why?
You're probably going to have Detroit in there.
Why?
Because they're better than the Nets.
I mean, they're not automatics. I think there's only five automatics.
I mean, the Heat, look at the market. The Heat numbers, 11.5 wins higher than the Nets. I mean, they're a huge favorite to get in over them. I mean, the Wizards are 45.5.
He's made it clear he thinks the Cavs are going to win a lot of games too.
Right.
So
sure, I think they win more than the Nets too when it's all said and done. But you even have, you know, the Magic and Nets. If you want to do, that's kind of the level we're talking. Magic are 31, Nets are 32. I mean, I think it's a big reach. But if you want to, we can side bet it or something for fun. For
how many how many wins will the 8th seed in the East have?
37 is fine. If you really think that the, you know, the Nets can get to 37, then you have an outside shot. I just don't see how they get.
There's a lot of Charlotte fans who are angry. Not that there's any Charlotte fans, but Charlotte fans will be angry that you haven't mentioned them.
Well, I just mentioned that there's five locks. There's just five locks, and then there's a next tier of, like, obviously the top of that tier in my eyes is Indiana, you know, Indiana and Miami.
Oh, yeah, I forgot Indiana, too. So Charlotte would actually be ninth. Anyways.
And what did I preface all that? Kai, don't roll on this and use it against me later.
Of course.
All right, Brian, now.
Let's get Brian's too.
Now you get to go.
Okay. I can tell you're not going to like this pick, Doug, by what you just said, but I like the Miami over. I think Eric Spoelstra is somewhat in the same vein as Brad Stevens. He absolutely maximizes his team every single year. And it's something like, if, you know, Preston could probably roll out some numbers and say, well, actually, you know, they've been under blah, blah, blah. But the reality is this team has had severe injury problems, really over the last ever since the Bosch stuff. And they've had dramatic stuff happen to them in season a lot. Last year, they had a period where they were having trouble fielding a team. And, you know, he has kept them afloat. So I think, just having Eric Spoelstra as your coach elevates you above your talent level. And I just think there's a really good chance that they're going to get Jimmy Butler. And, I think that they are a deep team. They are a very systematic team. And I'm not feeling like they're going to head towards 50. And I think this is a good number. This is put by, you know, at 43.5 is a number that is well thought out. It's put there for a good reason. But even just because I think they're getting Jimmy Butler, I feel like that's an over.
I can't disagree with you. I love Spoelstra.
He said real quick, there's stats to go against it. I actually agree. If I recall, the only other team the last two seasons that has kind of taken the offensive game of today, which is 2018 basketball, where you shoot as many corner threes as you can or just open threes, layups, you know, the Rockets essentially, but try to turn that defensively to a point where then you're trying to take away as many corner threes defensively as you possibly can. And sometimes that means giving up more open threes from the wing or straight away, or maybe open, you know, mid-range jumpers. It's always Boston and Miami, I think, now for either two or three straight seasons as far as defending corner threes, which I think tells you how well-versed they are analytically and how much they're really maximizing and trying to just optimize every little decision they make before games in preparation, and obviously as they're playing the game. So, yeah, it's Miami over for me, too, if I had to make a play.
All right, that's good. So this one may surprise you guys. And I don't feel great about it, but, you know, we're getting kind of down the list here. I'm going to go with the Clippers over 37.5. I think the Clippers are a potentially sleeper team. The reason that they would have difficulty getting to be a 500 team isn't because of flaws with their roster. It's because of the competition in the Western Conference. I actually think they have a lot of things going for them. You know, there's a lot of excitement against Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, although I'm going to tell you that historically, if you look at it, rookies don't tend to impact win totals that much. But they struggled at the point guard position significantly last year because of injuries. And so shoring that position up with a guy giving him some quality games, I would assume, is going to help. Tobias Harris is heavily maximized to have a good season. He's headed for restricted free agency. You know, Lou Williams is going to be Lou Williams. You know, I'm not expecting Danilo Gallinari to play that much, but even if he gives them like more than, you know, 15 decent games, that'll be ahead of where they were last year. And they are a sleeper team for, Jimmy Butler. I would say, you know, if this drags on into midseason, and Miami moves on, there's a possibility that, you know, that's an outside shot. Not that I'm factoring that in. I think the Clippers are going to be roughly a 500 team. It's not going to be good enough to make the playoffs. They could end up being, you know, 40 and 42 and end up finishing 11th in the West. I think they're going to, there's, you know, they get to play 41 home games and they're going to win a lot of games on their home court. And they're going to go out to the Eastern Conference and be able to beat up on some of those weak teams too. So, don't feel super great about it, but I lean Clippers over.
That's interesting. I wonder, that just interests me. That's a very interesting, I have no opinion on that.
I'm going to be betting under. So I'm actually opposite Brian on this. They were my next, pick fourth on my board, on my list here, Jazz, Spurs, Cavs, and then fourth is Clippers under. I do the same thing as I do with the Nets. Marcin Gortat, Tyrone Wallace, Tobias Harris, Till Dosich, Mbamute, Gallinari, Lou Williams, Mike Scott, Wes Johnson, Beverly. Then obviously they have rookies and Harrell in there, Bradley. They have a ton of guys that are like serviceable, but I just don't see how in the West they're going to be getting to 500. And you can, you know, make the argument that Gallinari never plays even close to a full season. Harris is injured quite a bit too. Teodosic was even last year. Mamute's coming off the shoulder thing. Beverly misses a lot of time, it seems like, regularly, too. I think they got Mike Scott on the roster now. I just looked it up. I just don't see him. My numbers say they're a 34-win team, so I'm actually going to be
see,
back.
I like Mike Scott. I like Mbamute. I agree that they're not star players, but, I mean, if you watch the Clippers last year, they, you know, did more with less the whole season because of injuries. They were playing and being competitive with two-way players. And, you know, that was when they made an in-season trade. And look, I don't know how you quantify this, but when you talk to people around the team, they say Blake Griffin not being there is a positive for the overall chemistry on the team. They had a tremendous training camp in Hawaii, which how couldn't you? But I think they're going to get off to a good start. I think that their schedule is, you know, generally the LA team schedules are, more favorable early because they get more home games. Again, I'm not predicting greatness for them. I just think that they're going to approach 500.
All right. I like it. The addition by subtraction with Blake Griffin. That's a good nugget there. All right. I'm going Knicks under with Porzingis out as long as he is. What is it? Till February? I just don't see how this team gets to 28 wins. Now, I understand they're in the East for all the reasons I mentioned with Brooklyn. I just think, you know, I just don't think they have the horses. It's just that simple. And as much as somebody has to win games in the East, they're also beating other Eastern Conference teams for the most part. And I think that's going to be the Knicks more often than it's not. If my math is correct. Like, they just have to lose 2 out of 3 games, right?
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I don't see them winning more than 1 out of every 3 games.
Yeah, and they're going to tank too, Doug.
Right, because they own their pick.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not saying that Porzingis won't step on the floor at all, but I do not think he will play meaningful games / meaningful minutes this season.
Yeah, I think it's one of those. If you're 12-38, and then Porzingis is ready to come back, why would you actually bother bringing him back? They'll probably say, he needs another week. Oh, he's starting to practice, you know, full scrimmages. And then he never really steps on the court, maybe other than a couple weeks at the end. So that one, I think if I had to bet it, under was on my board too, is down further. But I agree, it's under or nothing with the Knicks.
Okay. Preston, you're up.
Sure, actually, forgot my next pick. I'm going to go Bucks. They were fifth on my board, and there's 47s out there in the market, even Westgate's pretty inflated. At
40. That was the other play I was going to do, damn you.
You would have got Knicks back on the other side. I believe in Budenholzer, if I'm saying his name correctly. He obviously has done it in Atlanta when he actually had some talent. He has quite a bit of talent. One thing that they were lacking was shooting. Not only does, I think, Budenholzer just get them better looks in general, he did it in Atlanta from 3, just offensively from their scheming. But Brook Lopez was a really big under-the-radar signing. I thought he just got overlooked in L.A. because of all the other young guys, and they weren't really competing. He was still like an all-star caliber player a couple years ago, and he can spread the floor, and his three-point shots improved a ton. And so I think having him on the floor over, what was it, Thon Maker or a Zeller, Tyler Zeller, maybe? I don't even remember the guys that they were throwing at center. I guess John Henson was in there, too. It's going to be a massive upgrade. And I think, you know, Budenholzer get the most out of Giannis in general and some of these other guys who are ready to, I think, make a step. Sterling Brown is an under-the-radar, didn't play a lot of minutes, but really good metrics guy, plus-minus guy. He's a rookie, but this is his second season. So maybe he makes a little leap and is a, you know, solid contributor off the bench. But over for Bucks, I think they're going to win at least 50 games, and so I have to roll with it.
Hard to argue with that. I like Milwaukee a lot this season.
My next one real quick.
Ryan, you good on that?
Yeah, I mean, I wish the number was maybe a game and a half lower. I'd feel a little better. But there was a lot of games that the Bucks lost that they could have won in the fourth quarter last year. And at least some of that was coaching, and now they have a top-notch coach.
All right, Preston, you're up again.
Yep, I got it here. And this is a bad bet just from a gambler's perspective in the sense that I'm betting on like really high variance teams now, but I think it's better to do that now that we're in the middle of the pack, probably, you know, betting games, or I should say team total under and overs that we don't love. But Pelicans under 45.5. My number's really close. It's like 43.8. I wouldn't typically bet under, but they are one Anthony Davis away, you know, injury away from being, you know, a 30 win team. And he gets injured pretty often. He finally was pretty healthy last year. The year before, I think he played 60-something games. But their roster just isn't very deep. And, you know, they added Julius Randle to the roster. They added Alfred Payton. Nothing, you know, too special. I just think one Davis injury, or even Drew Holiday, who's missed time in the past in his career, if he's gone, then you're relying on Payton and Etuan Moore. I think if they're all healthy, I have it at, you know, basically 44-win team anyways, which is a slight edge to the under at 45.5. And I think, you know, one injury then swings us totally my direction. So Pelicans under 45.5.
Yeah, it's a tough one because I don't even know if they're a 35-win team if Anthony Davis misses a bunch of games.
Sure, yeah.
But Anthony Davis is an absolute beast right now.
Is he the best player in the NBA?
Not
MVP. Is he the best player in the NBA?
In the regular season this year, he's got a shot at it because, you know, depending on how the Lakers percent, if the Pelicans win more games than the Lakers, which is possible, and Durant cruises, you could have Anthony Davis as a serious MVP contender. The last 2 months of the season last year, he was the finest 2 months of his career. He's really focused. I sat down with him for a half hour last night in New Orleans. He's talking and focusing on things that I'd never heard from him before. His leadership has taken a jump. And the way they play up-tempo, like he's like, I'm getting 68 points a game just because I'm outrunning the other center. And he's right. You know, not that I'm judging anything on a preseason game, but he played 30 minutes basically last night and he had like 35 and 15. If he was playing a regular speed game, regular minutes, he would have had – he would approach 40 and 20 in that game. So I would have stayed away from this one just because, like, Preston is right. They are not as deep as they were last year, and they are a team that always seems to have injuries, and they can't really withstand them in certain positions. But Anthony Davis is so good that I would just be worried that he has an MVP season and they win 50 games. That's definitely within the realm of possibility.
See, I even think he just might be the best, like most talented player in the NBA at this point right now with LeBron.
You can have that discussion six different ways.
Right.
He's an absolute beast.
Yeah. All right, I'm up next. We probably should pick it up a little bit, although this is so fun to nerd out in the NBA. I'm going Philly under. And so often, just given the nature of the NBA, is that teams sort of have to get over hurdles and take the next step. We've seen that with the Celtics the last couple of years. Over the years, that is typically the way it goes. It's a rite of passage, if you will. But every once in a while, you get a team that took a big leap, and we just assume they're going to take the next step. And I think we're assuming that with Philly. I'm not convinced Ben Simmons can shoot. I'm not convinced Markelle Fultz can shoot. And Joel Embiid could not obviously play a full season last year. He was always gassed in the playoffs. And I love the guy in terms of an entertainment standpoint. Obviously, he's super talented. I love his Twitter feed. But I hope every time he's tweeting, he's on the treadmill or something, because the guy was out of shape. And it was bothersome because the ceiling is pretty high with this Sixers team. And 54 wins is a lot, especially a franchise that, wait, what'd they win, like 17 in a row at one point at the end of the season? You take that away, and it's like, how good are they? I think under 54, given that it's, you know, we're getting in the middle of the pack here, is more winnable than losable, if that makes sense.
I wish they would have done more in the summer, because they had cap space. You know, they went out, they did get a meeting with LeBron, but that was never, actually not even with him, with his agent, that was never going to happen. They just weren't able to make a major upgrade. Now, they would say, hey, we got Wilson Chandler basically for free. You know, that is an upgrade, but he's already hurt, and he's always hurt. I would lean more towards over, because they were 27-5 down the stretch last year, and that was with Embiid dealing with injuries. But they have some flaws that they have to address, and one of the things that they're really struggling with is they've got Markel Fultz's psyche that they're really trying to handle. And you know, now they're, you know, I have no idea what they will be when they're a week into the season, but right now they're saying they're going to start him, but not start him in the second half, which is like a way to like assuage him and assuage his ego. But their lineup with JJ, with their starting lineup with JJ Redick, it was one of the best lineups in the league last year. And the concept that they wouldn't want to start that lineup is only to make Fultz feel better about himself. And if that's the case, they may sacrifice a couple of wins or two along the way. That said, I still think they're really good, and I still like over, but I'm not like pounding down the door to make this bet.
Yeah, this is really interesting. It was on my board to bet under, but way lower. Just to kind of one of those, if I had to take a bet, I was going to go under 54. This Redick Fultz thing's intriguing that Brian mentioned, and on top of it, I mean, they won. It was a 27-5 run. They won 20 in a row, I think, at one point. Maybe it's 21. A lot of that was they just got really hot. They shot the ball from three at an abnormal rate, and two of the main guys were Bellinelli and Ilyasova, who are no longer on the roster. And so it's weird now that they would bench, not necessarily bench, but I mean, we'll see how it all pans out. But Redick's coming off of the bench for Fultz, and now they already lack shooting with Simmons. I think Saric and B can stretch the floor. They have to, you know, the defenses have to respect it, but they're not shooting at a rate, at least yet in either of their careers, that it actually is really painful for the defense. And so unless Covington really, you know, is a 40-plus percenter, which I don't think he has been yet in his career, I mean, Redick to the bench, I think, is a massive downgrade for their starting lineup. So it's one of those where I actually don't disagree with the decision long-term, because you're trying to get Markel Fultz in that right mindset. Like Brian was mentioning, I think that's actually a really good play, kind of, but you're giving up some wins, I think, or at least some positive expected value in those first halves when you're starting Fultz over Redick. So, yeah, this is really an intriguing team to watch this year and follow.
I predict they're going to be starting Redick full-time sooner or later is my prediction.
Yeah, I agree.
What's it going to take for them to punt on Fultz?
They're not there yet, but the problem is
no,
that
I know.
They can't.
Like, get out your crystal ball. Like, what needs to happen for them to punt on him? Because that's certainly out there. I mean, it's a possibility,
well,
I guess, is what I should
say. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, he needs development time, but they're in championship competition mode. So that's going to be scrimmaging within the team going forward. And we're seeing that manifest itself in this kind of two different halves lineup. They're trying to split the baby, and that's going to continue to go. So I don't know. We'll see. But you know, when the cookie crumbles, you can't play a guy you don't trust. They didn't play him in the playoffs last year. So I don't know. We'll see.
All right, you're up, Brian. Back to back. Oh, sorry.
I just wanted to say one thing. I know we got to hurry this up, but Fultz, I mean, if they first quarter unders, by the way, if he's starting defensively, he was actually really good against, you know, the Dolphins when he did see time last year. So that's something to watch out for, is betting him if he's starting these first quarters. But I'm really intrigued just to see how the teammates respond, because it could just be this real mess, and then, like Brian said, it could just totally go in flames. I think Redick will be starting. Honestly, give it 3 weeks tops. But punting Fultz is weird. I think if anything happens, a trade pops up that makes him a lot better. right during the season and contender and more of a contender, and then that's when Fultz would actually get booted. I don't know if they're really ever punting on them.
Like maybe Fultz for Love or something like that?
Maybe.
I don't know. It's hard to – we'll have to just say. I don't think they're – that's a long way off. So I am going to go under on the Chicago Bulls.
Nice.
They're at 30, I think, is their number.
Yeah.
Number one, I think they're going to tank towards the back half of the season if they're out of contention. Number two, they're Lauri Markkanen, who's going to be one of their most important players, is going to miss a couple of months. And Jabari Parker is that experiment, and it's a hell of an experiment at $20 million, is already going sideways. They've taken him out of the starting lineup, and they're bringing him off the bench just in the preseason. Now, I am expecting Zach LaVine to have a better year this year, and he better. He just signed a 70-something million-dollar contract. But and I don't need to really go any further on this. I don't think they're a 30-win team.
Can't disagree with you there. I had that circled as well.
Yep, it's on my board, too. It actually would have been one of my next two picks. I like it.
All right, Brian, you're up again.
Going to go with another Eastern Conference team under Orlando. Going to go under 31. I feel a little squishy about this one, because again, somebody in the East has to win games. They just don't have much talent on their roster.
Who's going to shoot the ball on that team?
Well, I mean, this is another team that has been in the lottery for a decade. Well, almost a decade. And they just, despite all those picks, they just don't have much talent. I know that they're high on Jonathan Isaac, who missed a whole bunch of last year, and they iced him a little bit because they were tanking. You know, they just gave Aaron Gordon a huge contract. I mean, I certainly understand his upside. I just don't like the roster. The reason I'm squishy on this is that Steve Clifford routinely got the most out of his Charlotte rosters. And, you know, he could be a guy that, like Brad Stevens, you take your expected wins and you flick it one or two or three because he's going to do it. And, you know, they're going to be just much better coach. But I just think most nights they're going to go out there, they're going to be outclassed talent-wise.
I can't disagree. I mean, I love their athleticism. They have all the high flyers at the rim, right? They have a bunch of height and athleticism at the rim. They're going to be fun to watch, just have no outside shooting.
I'm excited about Mo Bamba. I just don't think he helps them win games in his first year.
Right.
Hey, real quick, Brian, I want to ask you a question before you jump to your next pick. What happened? I follow Magic pretty closely anyways, and I think they have a lot of cool young talent. I thought the signing for pretty cheap relative to market of Jonathan Simmons from San Antonio was really strong. Nothing. He hasn't really shown anything since. Was he just kind of more of a Spurs? Was it a Spurs thing then? Is he just not as good, or is he just not fitting with the group? I just thought he would be better for him. Do you know much there?
Well, there's sort of a stigma that is happening in the league. What happens to expatriates?
Okay.
What happens to ex-Spurs? I was actually at a dinner last night with a couple of assistant general managers who were scouting, who were at the game I was at. And this is the kind of things that assistant general managers scrimmage over a meal. They got into a semi-heated argument over the Kyle Anderson contract that Memphis gave, which was a four-year, $32 million deal or something like that. And that's another situation where a former Spur, I actually thought if you looked at the value of Simmons, I thought it was a good signing at the time as well, but he did underwhelm. So I'm not ready to run away from him yet. But again, there are some exciting potential players on this team. But I just don't, if I'm a team and I look down at the layup line at the other side, my knees aren't knocking, and I think Jonathan Simmons fits into that.
I could just imagine that dinner table just totally. It's a good image. Well, we are a gambling podcast, so we have to mention Haralabob Vulgaris. And I think that gig for him, just the NBA doing that, is fascinating. I'm going to take over 35.5. I actually think that's good for I would assume a couple wins just given the advancement of analytics and what he brings. And then also you mentioned the coaches squeezing everything. I'm a big Rick Carlisle fan. I think Doncic is ready to make the transition. Now they're not going to flirt with the playoffs. But 35.5 wins, I think if the stars align and they are deep with some of their guards off the bench with Harris and Barea, and they, again, it's kind of a smoke and mirrors thing with Carlisle, I'd like them to get over that.
Yeah, you guys, I got you on Bucks, but you just got me back on the map, so that would have been my next pick, actually. And I was going to mention the Vulgaris thing. At first I thought, you know, maybe he'll be good for them as far as the way they're able to analyze young guys or assess young talent or potential trades. And then I really was thinking about how much value there's going to be to rotations, assuming Carlisle buys in and everything, too. I imagine they wouldn't have hired him if they weren't. So now you're thinking every game, every minute of every game, they're going to have the optimal guys playing those minutes and those that are playing together with it should be. That goes a long way when no one else is at least probably doing it to that degree. And so I think over 35.5 is a good bet. And people forget, I think DeAndre Jordan's a maverick, right? Like, he's on the team. I think Dennis Smith Jr. is going to take a step up. Wesley Matthews might stay healthy. Harrison Barnes, pretty good player. I mean, they have a ton of guys there that I think can get him to 36 wins.
Yeah, and I think it's also, I know he's talked about, at least alluded to it in podcasts with Zach Lowe or Bill Simmons over the years, just in terms of just, you mentioned like personnel, but also just strategizing about ways to beat the Warriors, things like that. I think there's just an outside-the-box thinking that the NBA hasn't seen, and I think it can only help. Brian, what's been the reaction in your league circles on that hiring? Because it was certainly big news in the gambling world.
Well, you know, it's hard to quantify. You know, it's kind of like the Clippers hiring Lee Jenkins, which is huge news in the journalism world. How do you quantify how that helps? You know, the thing about Bob, because I've known him for years, is that he would look at different areas where he thought that there were advantages in the market. And, sometimes, you know, there were times where he thought that the, sports books were, you know, not exactly pricing the over under, the quarter over unders. Mm-hmm. So there were seasons where he pounded the quarter over unders. And there were other seasons where he felt like there were teams that, you know, I think one of the greatest years he ever had was, coming out of the lockout. He just basically bet the under on every game because he just assumed every team was going to be out of shape, playing slower. It's not the same. And he ended up really cleaning up on that. So, you know, it's kind of a money ball style, which is find the inefficiency, find the where you can take advantage. I think he will help. The problem is, you know, how does that help immediately? I think it's hard to know. The thing about Luka Doncic, first off, he's not in NBA shape. Second off, he's a little bit turnover prone. And third, as I said, historically, rookies don't really help you win a lot of games. Even if you look at a guy like LeBron James, they won more games, but they went from being a tanking team to basically just a middling team. It's hard for rookie to make a major impact. So, I am more inclined to lean towards the over because the under is so low. I remember because the over under is so low, 35.5 is kind of low for a team like that, but I don't feel great about this. I would have stayed away from this, on my board.
Gotcha. All right, Preston, you're up back to back.
Yeah, I got two quick ones, since you sniped the Mavs. I'll go Grizzlies over 33.5. That's very injury, you know, dependent. I need Marcus Gasol and Mike Conley to stay healthy, and I think it's a pretty easy win. They're going to grind wins for sure at the rate of 34 or more. I have this projected if they're all healthy at like 39, which is like a massive edge, but I realize that there's, you know, probably, I think Parsons is supposedly healthy even coming into the season too, but there's a really good chance those guys all miss games. So I think it's, you know, maybe accounting for that should be somewhere in the 36 range, but that's still, you know, a 2.5 game edge versus the 33.5 I'm taking here. And then real quick, I'll just do my second one and then you guys can kind of touch on it. But Pacers under 40, I have another numbers play. I have this at 45.3 wins. And I just don't think there's a much more upside to Indiana being a 50-win team. I mean, they got so much out of the roster. Oladipo deserved everything that he earned last year. Like, but where do they really, like, how do they take another step? Where the Bucks, I think there's, you know, they're the same win total basically around 48. You can see where they could be a 50-plus win team. I don't see it with the Pacers, and then one injury to Oladipo, and I think, you know, they're the Nets or something. So no offense to Indiana, but I had to go under with 48 there on the Pacers.
Yeah, the Pacers were awful when Oladipo was out, and there was sort of like the Cavs showed like how you stop them, and I wonder if other teams are going to implement that because they were so dependent on Oladipo last year.
They also made an interesting signing with Tariq Evans. It's hard to know. Tariq Evans was really good with the Grizzlies last year.
Come on.
But you know that they're hoping that buoys them a little bit. But I'm high on the Pacers, but that number is really high. That number is high. Like if you know, I don't really see the Pacers a 50 win team. I kind of see it as like best case scenario 48, and you don't want to take best case scenario. So I agree on the under. Grizzlies had a nice off season. They totally stole Garrett Temple, who's a decent role player from the Kings because everybody that does business with the Kings robs them.
Brian's first pick. I just love it how it's common thread throughout.
Kyle Anderson, you know, he's should help on a winning team. I don't know about the actual contract. I'm going to put that aside. He should be a plus player for them. And Jared Jackson, Junior, their first round draft pick, is a guy who has got a very NBA ready game. So while I don't think he'll be carrying them to wins, I think he will contribute. A little bit concerned that Marc Gasol he's sort of been up and down in the preseason here. So we'll see. But that number is so low, 33.5. You look at their talent, you're like, boy, that's more than a 33 win team. But in the West, it's kind of hard. But I don't hate that. I don't hate that call.
All right, we have some high-profile teams left. I'll take one off the board. I'm going to go under 56.5 wins with the Houston Rockets. I was very upset. I was hoping for closer to 60 with this team, given what they did last year, the number one overall seed. But the odds makers are not dumb. They know there's going to be some regression. They lost some significant defensive stalwarts, if you will, with Ariza and Lou Richard. I think they were hungry last year. They got Chris Paul. Everything was new. They did not lose back-to-back games between early January, like the 5th and 6th, not necessarily back-to-back nights, just back-to-back games, until the Western Conference Finals against the Warriors. A lot of things went right for this team, including the injury bug, although Chris Paul and Harden did miss a little bit of time, so it wasn't completely flawless. But it just takes a lot for this team that lost so much defense in a better Western Conference that doesn't have that like initial excitement/hunger of chasing the Warriors, adding Chris Paul. I think I'm going to go under 56.5 with the Rockets.
Yeah, I think that's the right play here, too. It was on my board down low. This is one of the most intriguing storylines that people won't talk about just because they didn't end up actually beating the Warriors last year, but they were so close. They put so much effort into it. They lost important defenders in Ariza, and then obviously Mamute, too, who you know had the injury of and maybe cost them the series ultimately.
Chris Paul's injury, yeah.
Yeah, but this is one now where they know where they can be. They'll probably let Harden and Paul rest if they need it. They've lost some depth. The West got better most everywhere else. And so I think going to 56.5 is good. I will say one thing. I think Carmelo in general is not an impactful addition. We saw it in Oklahoma City. But the way that they play, assuming he's buying into just spotting up and shooting threes, assuming they go that route, then he actually is a good spot-up three-point shooter. I think something like 42% to 40%. Over like the last 7 or 8 seasons, spotting up from three, which is remarkable. That's great. So he could actually end up being a plus addition. I think what most people, and me, myself included, I'm not a Melo fan, and you immediately say the Carmelo addition is not going to actually help, you know, the Rockets beat the Warriors. Probably not. But if they use him correctly, they're not letting him go ISO and post up and do stuff like that. Then I think he can be a good addition ultimately.
Yeah, I mean, the Rockets are going to be a team that I think is going to be more potent in the playoffs in the regular season. We'll see if they fight for seeding. Last year, they were really motivated to get home court. And they ended up getting that game 7 at home. It didn't work out. So, I don't know how hard they're going to chase it, especially if they're going to prioritize health and rest for some of their guys like Chris Paul.
All right, Brian.
You heard anything on Brandon Knight? Either of you guys? Is Brandon Knight going to be a force at all?
I don't think he's ever been a force, but okay. he's already injured again. So
we got to get moving. We have about right. 10 teams, I believe, or 11 teams left. So we got to pick up the pace. Brian, you go back to back here.
I'm at the point where I don't feel great about any of these. So I'm not going to defend them too hard.
Otherwise we'd be betting 30 season win total.
I'm going to take Portland over 42. They've got two really good players. This season could go sideways for them. They could have massive turnover between now and next season. But because they are a pretty good team, I still think they're a winning team. So I'm going to go over. And I'm really going back and forth in my mind on Charlotte at 35.5. I don't like their roster. They're going to have Kemba Walker, though, potentially looking like a beast trying to get paid. And if they're healthy, they do have more talent than a lot of their Eastern Conference brethren. So like I said, I've been going under on some of these East teams. And I went under on the Bulls. I went under on the Magic. I'm going to have to go over 35.5 on Charlotte, just because I think Kemba Walker will be trying to snooker the Hornets into giving him a max contract and carry them to some victories, especially at home.
I have no opinion on those two teams, although I do like the word snooker. How about you, Preston? Any opinion?
Yeah, I would just say real quick, the Hornets are, I think, a big wild card. I'm not going to be touching their season win total. Blazers, like, over 42. I think it was Ben Falk at Cleaning the Glass who actually was tweeting about it yesterday, but he was going back and looking at teams or coaches that had overachieved versus the season win total to where they actually ended up. And they were the best, I think, the last of all the stops here. So what is that, 5 years maybe now in Portland? They were number one. I think Spurs were number two. But I mean, they just win more games than the market expects. They've overachieved every year. And now Brian made the point, though, it's hard to bet it because this could be the year they trade McCollum or Lillard for someone and things go sideways early. And then, you know, they're probably definitely going under the total. So it's a tough one to openly put money on.
My next play is Detroit. I'm going to go under 38.5. I think the Blake Griffin excitement has worn off. I don't know how much they have there. I just not been impressed. I don't think they're a 500 team, and I know we're scraping the barrel here, so I shouldn't be loaded with analysis, but I like Andre Drummond. I just don't like the sum of the parts.
Well, Reggie Jackson's been a huge disappointment for them. They really needed him to be an effective player, and due to injuries and other issues, he just hasn't been, and it's one of the reasons why Stan Van Gundy got fired, because he traded for him and gave him a huge contract, and he let him down.
Doug, you don't like Zaza Pachulia, that acquisition?
No, I know. Although he's a starting center for a championship team.
I do kind of like a Glenn Robinson addition, but, I mean, you know, we're pretty deep into this talking about Glenn Robinson.
I will say, too, Luke Kennard had under the radar a really good rookie year. I was going to use them as one of the things I've said you used them. I was going to bet over 38.5, though. Dwayne Casey wins 63 games in the regular season. He doesn't win in the playoffs unless, you know, it's not a LeBron team. But Dwayne Casey there, I think, maybe a big upgrade. And, you know, kind of hit a restart button. Blake Griffin now practicing in the offseason. I think if I were to – it's just a kind of a variance thing. You know, I think they are going over 38.5 a little more often than under. So I would have gone that direction. Instead, I will be taking – let me double-check here. It is – okay, Wizards over 45.5. It's my 16th team on the board. So Wizards over 45.5, probably a similar type of thing, just more upside if – things gel, and there isn't a total combustion there in Washington. So my number is 47.1. It's nothing I would be betting. But the Wizards are still really good. I think Scotty Brooks as a coach is meh, but overall, X's and O's wise, you know, he's average, maybe below average. But he gets guys, whether it be in Oklahoma City or young guys like Otto Porter Jr. or Kelly Oubre Jr., to a point where they're actually pretty serviceable NBA players. And so I like what they're doing there. And if, you know, John Wall stays healthy, Bradley Beal isn't complaining, then they definitely have a shot, I think, at being that kind of near 50-win Eastern Conference team, or kind of where the Bucks are and the Pacers are.
Yeah, I mean, your guess is as good as mine on some of these. The Wizards are a tricky team. I think there's some dysfunction a little bit. There's some playoff sort of stench that lingers over with this team, but does it really affect them from prevent them from winning 46 games? I don't know.
Oh, I get a second pick, too. Oh, sorry about that. I just realized. Denver under 47.5 is my next one. And I like Denver, guys. I liked everything about the team. They're young and they're one of the most fun teams to watch. I couldn't tell you anything more than I have them at 46 wins. I think, you know, they'd probably be a 48-win team if LeBron wasn't in the West. I think he's changed a lot of these Western teams to where they're slightly high. I'm outside of, like, I think the Jazz and the Spurs. I'm actually betting unders like Pelicans and actually I did like the Grizzlies over too, but I'm under on a few other West teams and Denver's one of them and they're left on the board. So under 47.5. But I for some reason inside I have no one close to me that's a Nuggets fan, but I just have fun rooting for them. I kind of hope that they are just really good. And I guess I feel bad they missed the playoffs last year because they're just such a fun team to watch.
They're a horrendous defensive team and that will always be across their ankles like a weight. And so every time you get excited about the Nuggets, they pull themselves back because they're so bad defensively. So I am high on the Nuggets too. I could see the Nuggets winning 48 games. I wouldn't bet on the Nuggets winning 48 games.
My pick is I'm going to take Atlanta under. I think this is a very bad roster. I don't see how they win. Like, I don't know where any of their wins are going to come from. Like, I don't know who they're better than. So I know the number's 22.
They aren't better than anybody.
And they're going to tank.
Yeah, I mean, look, 22.5 seems like really low. But when they start out 2-12, you're like, all right, so that leaves 68 games. That means they have to win 21. You know, it's like you start going through these lose 4 or 5 stretches, and then all of a sudden you're like, it's like the Marlins this year. I bet them under 65.5. Barely got there. But at some point you realize, wow, you know, when they get swept back-to-back series, you're like, okay, well, that now they need to play 500 ball, you know, it's like at some point the Hawks are going to be like, all right, they're not winning more than 17 games.
I do like Lloyd Pierce over there. I'm curious to see how he ends up, you know, being as a head coach. He's been in Philadelphia as an assistant under Brown, and he can end up being a really good positive. I will say one thing, Brett, as we were launching this and starting, which was about, 7 hours ago, John Collins had surgery apparently, and Brian probably already knew this, but he's out for, I think, at least 2 weeks. And I think he's one of the 6 NBA guys on the roster that probably shouldn't be in the G League. So, that's kind of another way, I guess, to look at under. You have a couple weeks maybe without John Collins.
I think he had PRP injection, but he's not even going to be reevaluated for a while. But, yeah, I mean, a lot of people are going to watch Trae Young. Again, I go back to tell you, historically, rookies don't help teams win. And so even if he has, you know, I know he had the other night where he made a buzzer beater, but I don't think he's going to help them win games. So I think, and at the end, and you know, I think they're going to tank to try to chase the top pick late in the season.
All right. I have a feeling my last few picks are going to be my best ones. All right. Tells you how much I know. All right. We got some big name team, big franchises left. Let's go, Brian, back to back. And then you're done.
I'm going to take under 62 wins for Golden State. I think the West is very difficult, and I think they're going to have difficulty, being focused night in and night out. Doesn't mean they're not the overwhelming chance for championships, but if and when DeMarcus comes back, if anything, I think that's going to cause them to spin their wheels a little bit. It may ultimately make them a stronger team in the postseason, but I don't know. I just they've already got the 73 win total. You know, the Steve Kerr is scrounging the bottom of the barrel to find things to motivate this team, and their night in and night out games are going to be just a little tougher. So I don't feel great about it, but I'm going to go under that for them. And I don't feel great about anything here. Phoenix, I think Phoenix is actually a much improved team. I think they're going to have a chance to win a lot of games. Just think of the Western Conference, it's going to be so hard to win. They're going to be the underdog like every single night in the West, except when they play Sacramento. And so even though I am going to give them 4 wins against Sacramento, I'm sort of leaning towards under on 29 and not feeling great about it, but just it's more commentary on the West than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, they can be more competitive in games. That doesn't mean they're going to win those games, right? That affects the point spread. Like, I always feel
Booker's dinged up, and they're just good enough to lose.
Yeah, I feel Atlanta's nightlife. Like, I remember Flip Saunders would tell me before NBA Tonight meetings that when they traded for Rasheed Wallace with the Pistons, he said, "Coach, don't count on me on these 4 cities," and Atlanta was one of them. And Flip would jokingly said, "You know what? He was right. I couldn't count on him because those the nightlife in some of those." So I feel like the Atlanta nightlife and maybe the establishment, the fact that teams will get looked past them. That means maybe they'll cover, but they're not going to win games. That's sort of like the difference maker with sort of the to a different reason. The Suns are going to be much more competitive, but that doesn't mean they're going to win. All right, final 2 teams. Very intriguing here. I'll jump on the Thunder under. 48.5. I mean, look, I like the addition of Schroeder. I think they're hungry. I think, you know, we talked about it with teams like the Spurs and the Celtics that maybe don't take nights off. Westbrook does not allow the Thunder to mail it in very often. His edge and competitive fire are admirable, and I love it as a fan. I just don't think he's as great as a player as everyone makes it out to be because of his shooting percentage and his ball hoggingness. And I'm not even convinced he's a point guard still. I think they're going to be right around that number. It's the last round. I'm going to go under just because the West is so stacked and obviously the injury variable.
Yeah, I agree there. And that's who I was hoping you'd just go for the Lakers. But I think you're like me. You don't want to actually have, you know, an under on the Lakers so you can use them. But Andre Roberson, the last I heard, I mean, they were such, you know, they were much more tame defensively when he couldn't play last year. But he had a setback and he's being reevaluated with his left knee thing from last year in 2 months as of October 4th.
He's actually had three surgeries in total, two follow-ups to the initial procedure. Jeez.
Yeah, I think under 48.5 is the way to go with the Thunder. And then I'm going to do under 47.5 for the Lakers. I just think it's going to take some time. They're probably going to be a fun team to watch and maybe even bet on post-All-Star break. They make a push for the playoffs and things are gelling a little more. But currently, they don't have a big man. I think JaVale will get some dunks and stuff. Lots of balls, but they're going to struggle, I think, defending inside when they play small. Their second unit, and maybe even JaVale, is more of just a shot blocker rather than a rim protector. And then offensively, probably takes some time. So under 47.5 for the Lakers to finish this up.
So
hard to bet under on LeBron, but I mean, the Lakers winning 46 games would be a tremendous season. It's not an insult to say on the under.
Preston, you and I talked about this the other night. You said a lot of people are making the assumption that LeBron's joining like the, you know, maybe Byron Scott Lakers or one of these teams that were just like they're good. Their young guys are good. Like they were frisky in the second half and they have some ballers here.
Oh yeah, they definitely do. I mean, they had a run and then it died off down the stretch. Lonzo Ball was sitting out and Ingram was out. And I think even Kuzma missed a few games, but the stretch, I think kind of after All-Star break for about a month and a half, they had like the third best record in the NBA for a stretch of like 8 weeks or not even that. It was probably more like 6 weeks, but I mean, that's really weird. And you can't really just like nitpick back on a 6 week sample, but they didn't have LeBron and they didn't have guys like Rondo and JaVale. You know, they will have some competency there. I think it's just a matter of time before they get it flowing, which is why I like the outlook of maybe betting on them post All-Star break.
Well, fellas, I really appreciate your taking the time. It was very interesting. I know our listeners will enjoy this even after Tuesday comes because there's a lot of good information in there. Like Preston dropping the Sixers first quarter under advice on early in the season with Fultz starting. So I like stuff like that. But Brian, a wealth of information. Appreciate all that perspective. How does it feel, Brian, to be really like full blown jumping with both feet in here in the gambling space?
I wouldn't say I'm jumping in, but I will say this. Speaking of Sixers, the two teams that have come back from China for the last 4 years, this is a particularly preposterous situation for the Sixers. They came back on Tuesday. Oh, they have to play the first game out of the gates. The two teams that have come back from China for the last 4 years are 1-7 against the spread and 1-7 overall in the
Ooh.
Opener.
Ooh.
So, right, it was the Warriors last year, I think, right? They totally
lost. Yes. And they blew a big lead and lost at home to the Houston. Rockets. The owner was running around the court. I wouldn't be surprised if the Sixers start a little slow just because coming back from China.
So when did they get back? When did they get back?
They got back Tuesday. Sometime on Tuesday. You know, fans kind of will roll their eyes and go, oh, a week's not long enough. And I'm like, well, I'm not saying they can't function in life. I'm just saying to run up and play against NBA basketball against other good NBA basketball teams. I expect them to start a little sluggish.
Celtics -5 in Boston in the season opening game, the first of two games on Tuesday night. I already liked Boston in that game, so I have now more reason to like the Seas in that one. Preston, thank you as well, man.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you guys throwing it together.
All right. Thanks to everyone downloading. Kai, you're a champ for staying late. And,
I got to say, Preston seems like a really cool guy, but I don't like the fact that he doesn't like my Nets so much.
Yeah?
Oh, no. My bad.
I'm on them.
You can yell at me later. A couple of weeks, if they're like 10-3, you can send me an email.
Oh, for sure.
All right. It's always fun to get down and watch your season-long bets because you basically have action on every night. And
money won is twice as sweet as money earned.
Don't forget those wise words, courtesy of Bob Lee, via the color money. All right, fellas, thanks again.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bets. You can listen and subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts.